Earlier this month, we told you about a multidisciplinary study titled For the Sake of All. It looked at how poverty and low levels of education affect the health of the African-American community in our region. The first of several briefs on the issue was released, and now we have the second. And it looks at how the health of black students can and does affect a rather alarming school dropout rate in urban districts in particular. Joining me in studio to talk about it are members of the For Sake of All research team. Dr. William Tate wrote the most recent brief. He's the Edward Mallinckrodt Distinguished University Professor in Arts and Sciences and chairs the Department of Education at Washington University. Dr. Jason Purnell is an assistant professor at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University. Dr. Jade James is the Director of Research and Medical Services at the St. Louis County Department of Health, a member of the For the Sake of All Community Partner Group. Thank you all so much for being with us. Good to see at least two of the three of you again. Jade, nice to see you for the first time. Well, let's talk about the scope of this problem. It's a big one. And Dr. Tate, you wrote the brief. So how big a problem is the dropout rate, number one, and how is healthcare or lack of it affecting it?
When you look at the school districts in St. Louis City and St. Louis County, and we looked at the year 2012, there were about 2,000 young people who dropped out of school in grades 9, 12. That's about 1 in 10. So that's pretty significant if you think about it as a production function. Every year, if you get about 1 in 10 kids dropping out, and it's, you know, depending on the base, 2,000-3,000 kids a year, that's a lot of young people who are not completing school. And what we're arguing in the brief is there are pathways that that are health-related that influence whether they drop out or not. Number one, if they have childhood illness and they don't have services for primary care or they don't utilize them for whatever reason, these children miss school. So if you have asthma, for example, and you're constantly in the emergency room, you're missing school. And you're just not going to perform well. You get behind, and then it makes it extremely difficult to graduate. A second pathway relates to mental health. And we simply don't have the kinds of services we need for the young people who might have some mental health issues. And those manifest themselves into behavior problems in school, and then they end up dropping out. And the third way is if you just get behind in school early, you end up with a lot of risky behaviors as you get into middle school and high school. And we don't intervene quickly enough, and those youngsters also find themselves dropping out. So those three pathways are very influential in the school dropout problem.
And that latter pathway can become very expensive to the society as a whole, can it?
Absolutely. I think about it in two ways. We lose a lot in terms of what these young people can contribute from an economic point of view, and we also pay a lot because their social costs are very high.
Dr. Purnell, are you surprised by this, by these figures?
Not at all surprised. I think we've known this for quite some time, that healthy children are more likely to be able to perform proficiently in school, and that there's an economic impact of children not completing their schooling. Hmm.
Dr. James, how about you? You're representing the county, and primarily one might think we're talking about city kids, but it goes beyond that, doesn't it?
It actually encompasses both St. Louis City and St. Louis County, and the numbers aren't surprising. It's just one opportunity to put more data to sort of the problem we all kind of knew about, but it gives some actual figures and the impacts for what we know was already an existing concern.
So what do we do about it? I mean, obviously the problem has been identified, and it's not a new one. What can we do, Dr. Tate?
We try to look at indigenous solutions that are really here in our region. And one example we gave is a recommendation that we think that all high poverty schools should have what we call a coordinated health service program within the school. Many schools have health education, health curriculum, and the like. They have PE. Some have a nurse. But the Centers for Disease Control recommends that there be a coordinated school effort around health that would include opportunities for psychological services and referrals within the school. It would also allow, would call for really more integrated, coordinated activity. So many things that happen are discrete, and there aren't a lot of integrated activities. And what the CDC is recommending is that there be a council. Every school should have one of these. There should be one at the district level. And there should be coordinated activities around health within the school that also allows for utilization. So the example we use is Mercy is in a partnership with the St. Louis Public Schools at Roosevelt High School. They have a clinic that's embedded almost everything in the CDC recommendation exists in that particular situation. And we believe that's an example of right here in St. Louis of best practices that's being implemented, and we hope that it could be replicated across the region. And secondly, I think St. Louis County has done an excellent job in terms of a funding source for psychological services, primary care health with their Children's Health Fund, and my colleague can talk more about that. But I think that's a best practice that should be replicated across the region. And then you can fund these kinds of activities. And on the psychological services side is where I'm really concerned that we may be missing opportunities to help kids who need it very badly. I think we talked about that the last time, and I think the county has done an excellent job of funding a funding source that could help.
Dr. James, funding. Let's talk about funding and where is it going to come from and where is it?
That's always a beautiful or an interesting question. But what Mr. Tate is referring to is the Children's Services Fund, which is a county fund that funds a lot of mental health services for the youth. It's generally funded through different organizations that also provide youth services. So it's not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but supporting the wheels that already exist. I think the other thing, your first question was kind of what can we do? I think we recognize that we're asking the question differently this time. A lot of times we talk about once you drop out of school, what are the health effects or the economic effects of that? This time we're actually saying when you have health conditions that they actually lead to the dropout rate. And we often don't ask the question from that direction. So one of the answers is to be a little more proactive, like the Mercy example, like the organizations that utilize the Children's Services Funds to try to get those, to try to address those health issues in the front before they become school dropouts.
Well, and before I take my break, Dr. Purnell, before they become school dropouts is one point of concern, obviously. What about preschool? I mean, a lot of the problems we're talking about, mental health issues and problems, surface long before kids even start in school. How do we deal with that?
Absolutely. And this is a way that this brief builds on the first brief. So the first brief really focused on early childhood development and providing the supports both prenatally and after children are born. Because children's health doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens within the context of families. We need to make sure that mothers, other caregivers, and the entire family are healthy and taken care of. And you're absolutely right. That starts in early childhood.
Right. I have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back and continue our conversation. We're talking about the connection between the health issues and the dropout rate in urban school districts. My guests in studio are Professors William Tate and Jason Purnell of Washington University. Also with us, Dr. Jay James with the St. Louis County Department of Health. We'll be back to continue our conversation. If you'd like to have some input into it, please give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we talk about the relationship between health issues and the dropout rate in urban school districts. Let me come back to you, Dr. Purnell, with regard to connecting the dots between, I mean, this is a long-term project that you've got going here with this For Sake of All project. What got you into this whole notion of connecting the dots between health care and education, the things that we've been talking about?
Well, there's a long tradition of research into what we call the social determinants of health, which is just that where people live, learn, work, and play has a large impact on their health. And people tend to think about health just in terms of health care or medical care, but we know that there are other factors. And what we really want to do is try to tell the story about those factors and help to set a policy agenda that's both informed by the evidence and informed by some community engagement, our partners in the community, to really say, how do we help to move the needle around some of these health disparities by looking at these other factors?
Dr. Tate, have you had any feedback following the first brief from policymakers or people who might be in a position to do something about these problems?
Directly from policymakers, Jason would know better because he's the head of the project, but we've gotten feedback from community partners and individuals who are engaged in the health delivery, health utilization, health care delivery per se. One of the things you have to be careful about when you bring up education is usually that's a sector that operates in isolation from the healthcare services. So when we say that there's a relationship between health and education, the canonical question is, who owns that? And I think one of the interesting dynamics for me has been the discussions with my colleagues on the healthcare side where they're actually doing a lot of things right, but they don't control what happens on the education side. What I'm really excited about is the example from the St. Louis Public Schools, because it's an example of educators actually taking ownership of part of the healthcare side of the equation, which is fascinating to me, especially under the pressure that educators have around accountability, which is a big issue here in our region. And most interventions in education are focused on academic pursuits, per se. You know, we're going to have a better curriculum. We're going to try to hire the best teachers and the like, when in fact many of the challenges we face are social, emotional, and obviously issues of physical health. And so I'm excited the fact that we have a superintendent, for example, who had the foresight to look at health as one of the conditions that had to be addressed in order to advance a school.
Dr. James, there's been wall-to-wall discussion today, and there will be for a good many days ahead, with regard to the Affordable Care Act. Do you see anything in that, as you understand it, that will be helpful to what we're talking about today?
I think it will be helpful. There are many facets, but one of the things that we talk about is just access to care in and of itself. And if you look at the brief, one of the first points of the health factor that leads to the school dropout is just childhood illness. So if you get individuals more access in the early childhood arena, in the grade school, middle school arena, if you just create healthier children, then you will essentially see a decrease, I should say, in the school dropout rate. So I do think that they are connected.
Dr. Purnell, one of the things that I've seen in the information accompanying your visit here today is the issue of poorly managed health care. What do we mean by that? Who's doing the poor management? Is it the school system? Is it our health care community? Or is it parents?
I think what that's referring to is just perhaps some chronic conditions that aren't being properly managed because of what Dr. James is talking about in terms of utilization of health care and properly following chronic conditions like asthma, for instance, and not having that under control in the right way.
Part of that, I suppose, is perhaps linked to the home, the household environment. Maybe parents not fully understand what their kids are suffering from.
I think it's an issue of awareness. It's an issue of connection between the home and the healthcare provider. But I think that is another place where the school can be a connector. There's a program here in St. Louis called Healthy Kids Express that uses a mobile van to go to schools and daycares and other places to educate people about asthma and other childhood illnesses. So there are examples of how we can reach into communities and homes and get this health information to people.
I think Ed in St. Louis wants to get into this part of the conversation. Let's bring him in. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm a citizen of the city of St. Louis, and I pay property taxes. And I am fascinated by in the public schools, the first day of school, kids don't show up, and we have to have a big push on kids need to show up the first day of school. Well, who is deciding whether the kid shows up or not? It's the parent. The parent has decided the kid is not showing up today because the kid, you know, the kid is not driving to school. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. I get, really, we're training these people to get a job. I get a job, and I decide not to go in the first day after I get a job. The first day, I decide I'm not going in. And I'm saying, there's something wrong here. Do you see? The parent is must have had a very bad experience on their first day of school to do that to their own kid.
Well, I'm not sure. Did Dr. James?
Thank you, Ed, for your comment. I will say this is, you know, one of those simple opportunities where coordinated care may be, you know, a place to insert. Sometimes kids don't show up because they haven't been to the doctor. They don't have the immunization. So this is one of those places where health can integrate. We've written a number of notices to schools saying this child is scheduled for an appointment, say, within 1 week to get their immunizations. We know back to school time is a huge time for healthcare offices to try to get those school physicals that are necessary, those immunizations are necessary. For a long time, schools would not let the kids enter if they weren't immunized properly. And that's a fair policy to have, but we sort of work together as systems, both health and education, to say, well, wait a minute, we know the first day of school is important. We can't possibly see every kid every day if appointments aren't made within a reasonable amount of time. So you see a lot of health fairs that will actually have physicals available for the kids. Some of them will have immunizations. Physicians will often open up additional slots around that school time to try to get the kids in. So yes, the parents have to accept some responsibility in this, but that's one of the examples where policies may need to work together so that you can actually get more kids in school the first day of school.
Dr. Tate, I'm a little confused as to how far the school itself should go in dealing with some of these problems, particularly where we're talking about mental health issues. Are folks trained in schools to be able to pick up on some of these problems? And if there's a litigious society we have today, what do you do about making it known that this youngster might have a problem?
Well, if you take the Roosevelt example where you have an actual clinic with health care providers within the school, and a teacher may, for example, may recommend a kid go in and talk with someone, that health care provider can then either on site or by way of recommendation send a child to the right services. We're not advocating necessarily that you would have a psychiatrist on in residence, but the opportunity to provide the student access to the appropriate health care, be it mental health care or whatever their services they may need, seems to be vitally important. The youngster is spending 8 hours a day there under very close guard by teachers, principals, coaches, and the like. They can see if there's a problem. And I think that it's a unique opportunity. It's a setting in which historically we've had school nurses and other professionals on campus. We used to have real counselors. Do you remember? They weren't just college counselors. They actually were people who were trained to provide psychological services to understand what was going on with both the learning trajectory of kids and their socio-emotional state. But because of our financial situations and the race to produce the, you know, high-performing children on a strictly academic model, we have deviated from that, and now we find ourselves without these resources in place. And so I firmly believe I wish we could go back in time and not do what we're doing right now and actually try to do the kinds of things that we used to do when we had counselors and the ability to make appropriate recommendations for young people.
Dr. Purnell, there's that funding issue again that pops up and raises its head. It seems that there's, as indicated here, so much teaching to the test that some of these other things slip beneath the cracks.
Absolutely, but I think we also need a different orientation towards our schools. We need to start asking what can we as communities do to help schools. And I think of another project that Dr. Tate and I are involved in where we're actually partnering with schools and school systems to ask them, what kind of health information are you collecting and how can we help you use that health information better? And the response that we get from schools is, you want to help. You're not coming in criticizing us. You're not coming in telling us what we're doing wrong. We need more of our partners in the community saying, how can we help these schools to make this situation better?
Only a few seconds left. What's the next brief?
The next brief will be entirely on mental health. And I want to say that people can check out forthesakeofall.org for more information on the project.
All right. Well, obviously, that's an important issue, Dr. James. I'm sure you see it that way.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Tate, you as well, obviously.
Yes, sir.
You've got a lot of work behind you, but a lot of work ahead. Thank you all so much. Professors William Tate and Jason Purnell, thank you for being with us once again. Dr. Jade James, thank you for being with us. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having us.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the local economic fallout from a possible federal government shutdown, and then we'll talk about the Center for Investigative Reporting's examination of the Department of Veterans Affairs over prescription of opiates to veterans. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.